So I love to look at AI through the lens of it's toxically positive. Right? Everything you say to it, it'll go, you're right. That's amazing. Thank you for pointing that out. Even if you are dead wrong. Right? If you can't explain to people what you're doing or what went wrong, then you're kind of at a standstill there, even if you're the best person in the world at finding issues. One of the things that I tell people that cut their QA teams is, that means your users are your first line of defense. Because they will find the bugs. I accidentally became a QA. Turns out I'm really good at finding those weird cases of like, well, what happens if I do hit enter 50 times? Oops, I broke the database.
Welcome to Software Testing Unleashed, the podcast for testers, test automation engineers, quality engineers, and developers who want to create great quality software. My name is Richie. I'm a software quality coach, keynote speaker, and author. My guest today is Tara Walton. She works in developer relations and is passionate about quality and testing. We talked about skills that a tester needs today. About communication, about perspective, courage, thinking outside the box, critical thinking, and how we can use AI nowadays for our job. And now, enjoy the episode. And one more thing before we go on. Over the last 25 years, I've seen a lot of testing projects. Some went great, some went sideways. And the difference was rarely the tooling. It usually came down to a handful of things teams got right or didn't. So I sat down and wrote them up. 7 success factors for software testing. It's a free ebook and it's now available in English too. And it's not just something to read on the couch. It's a workbook with exercises so you can check where your own project stands on each factor. If you want to have a look, you'll find it on tul.fm/ebook. The link is also in the show notes. And now have a good one and enjoy the episode. Hi, Tara. Great to have you on the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Richard. I'm so excited to be here today.
Yeah, it's great. We had a long story the last year. I invited you and then we talked and then I shifted the meeting up and down and everywhere. It was a crazy year, but now we are finally here.
And then holidays and then adventures and it's... But we made it. We're here, and I'm so excited to finally get to be here.
Yeah. And we also just noticed that we see each other on Eurostar this year. So yes. Our first in-person meeting there.
It'll be so exciting to finally. I love meeting people that I know finally in person for the first time. It's like a whole new experience.
You get
that moment of, oh, you're taller than I thought.
That's almost the thing at all. Okay. Yeah. And 3D. Yeah.
Yes. So that'll be so exciting. I can't wait to see you and everybody else that's going to be there. I've heard wonderful things about the program and it's one of my favorite conferences. So I'm super stoked to go.
Yeah, great. So let's get into some topics today. I think we can talk about a lot of things, but one thing what comes to my mind at first when what we talked about up front and so is, what do you think a tester needs today as a most important skill?
Well, I think there's a big shift, particularly right now. Right? We've got these lovely new tools coming out and people shifting all over the place. But I keep coming back to the basics of, testing 101 skills and communication. If you can't explain to people what you're doing or what went wrong, then you're kind of at a standstill there. Even if you're the best person in the world at finding issues, if you can't explain them and you can't communicate why it's a priority, then you're done. That's your block. So I keep falling back to those kind of basic human skills and the rudimentary testing skills that I think we forget sometimes when we've been doing this for 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. What do you mean with the testing 101? What are your basics you want to see from a tester?
I think there's a lot of things that we tend to take for granted and that sometimes you forget about because I've always just done it. So if I'm training somebody new or implementing it in AI, I can't assume that they know how to find an edge case or that a user is probably at some point going to hit the enter key 500 times because they're frustrated with their internet or just those random things that as a tester, you kind of do automatically. But when somebody says, well, why would you even test that? Why does that matter? Well, that's the basis of what we do, right? Is making sure that things are functional and that our users are happy and getting the experience and the results that they expect. Because you could have the best software on the planet, but if it's not what your users thought it was going to do, that's still a problem.
Yeah, that's so true, yeah.
So I think falling back to those skills and not getting too high up in the technical or the business needs and remembering, I still have to make sure that negative numbers work or don't work, or I can't put alpha characters in a calculator.
I think that that's also a thing that we have to remember as experienced testers when we talk to juniors or to other people in the project, which is that some things are for us so clear, but they are not aware. Some people are not aware of all these methods or about thinking about what can go wrong with an input field. But we think, okay, we're doing this 20 years now, so it's all in our DNA now.
Absolutely. It's just that second nature.
Yeah. Okay, now. But we cannot think that other people have that too. Yeah, so we have to talk about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I think the things that I found with the shift towards AI is it's great in finding these use cases and you feed in requirements and that's great, but it misses some of the stuff that's really obvious to somebody who's been doing this for a while. It's those moments of going, this is great, but what happens if I copy and paste War and Peace into this field? Is it going to break stuff? our tools aren't made to think that creatively. So we have to do that as part of our own skills and conversations and questioning things and saying, what if, and did you think about all the time?
Yeah. When we come to the other part, like you say, we have to talk about what we are doing, that other people understand what we are doing in testing and in the quality part. How can we learn that?
I think I've learned it just by being open to correction, right? Being humble. I know that I'm very good at what I do, but I'm not very good at explaining it to other people. So when people say, oh, it would be easier if you sent me a video. Okay, I can do that. Right? If you write down every single step, pretend like I've never seen this software before and write down every single step. Great, I can do that. So being open to those changes when people say this doesn't work for me, because I don't know that necessarily any of us are bad at communicating. It's more communication styles. I'm a very visual person, right? Show me the screenshot, show me the video. That's more helpful to me than a perfectly written step-by-step that I can't follow.
Yeah. So it also always depends also on the audience who I'm talking to.
Yeah. And of course, if you're talking to a dev that you've worked with for 10 years versus a C-suite who maybe just joined your team, right? You have to approach those things differently and ask. I like to ask right up front, what helps you understand what I'm doing? What is your stake in this and what you need? Because if they don't care how many bugs I found before release, then I'm not going to tell them that. Right? But if I can wave a great big red flag and say, remember how you were really concerned about your users not being able to do whatever, Well, guess what I found?
Yeah.
And guess what they can't do?
Yeah. I think when we test this, we have one critical part is when we talk to manager and they don't really understand what we are doing and say, okay, you just cost me a lot of money here sitting there finding some bucks or something like that, what are you doing there the whole time? Do you have any arguments or any shifts that we can give as a, from the tester's perspective to a manager that he likes us, the QA?
It's such a double-edged sword when I look at it, because if you're doing your job really well, you're preventing issues, right? And then it becomes this weird QA roller coaster that we see all the time of, oh, everything's going smoothly, I don't need QA. Right? And so then they fire us because we all want to save budget. And then all of a sudden, everything starts going really badly, right? So I think for me, one of the things that's been most important is staying at the forefront of my devs' minds. Not necessarily the managers, but making sure the devs know that I am a resource. They can come to me and say, okay, I've got these use cases. What am I missing? Because that is my expertise. And then you just kind of become a part of the conversation. I've had teams that have looked around and gone, hold on, if we're grimming, why isn't Tara here? She has good insight. She helped me with this feature. And so being open to those conversations, being at the table, asking if you can go to the table. You know, I would love to know more about the features that are upcoming. Can I join you? are really great ways for me to start those relationships. Because to me, that's what they are. They're relationships, right? You have to build that trust to say, I'm not here just to take up a seat or to be the bad guy and tell you what you're doing wrong. I'm here because I really care about our product. I believe in it. And I want our users to have as much faith in it as I do. So what can I do to help?
Yeah, yeah. I think what you said is that trust is, I think, a very important word nowadays when we talk about all the AI stuff and so too, because I think we as the quality people, we are now dealing with a lot of Vibe Copilot coded stuff, quality unknown, and we are the ones who are giving back trust into this stuff when we test it and when we deal with this software, yeah?
Yes. Yeah, I think trust for me has always been the foundation of what I do. For me, the user has always been number one, stakeholders number two, because you can have the best software on the planet, but if it's not what your users are asking for and what they need it to do, then they're not going to use it and they're not going to care. And I saw that shift. I was so hesitant to start adopting AI myself because I saw so many flaws in it. And you really do have to spend time with it. You really do have to build that trust and say, I know where the potholes are. Let me show them to you so we can avoid them. Let's navigate around them and then we can fix them. And figuring out what you can trust, what you can't. I think what you can't is probably more important. We're all assume that, you know, everybody has good intentions. I don't really know that AI has intentions. but we all have good intentions and we want to do a good job and we want to do it quickly. But that means some things get lost. And so we've got to take extra care to make sure that those rudimentary boxes are checked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
otherwise,
true. Yeah.
Trust goes away that quickly, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's where that goes away very fast, but to build it up, it's not so, it's a long process. Yeah.
Yeah, especially once it's been broken, because I've been burned before.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. On the AI side, we have another thing that I think when we use AI as a support for us as testing or something, we have also to gain our skill of critical thinking about what is the output, how does it help us, is it really correct, because it all sounds so smooth what comes out there. what's your experience with this skill?
I love to look at AI through the lens of it's toxically positive, right? Everything you say to it, it'll go, you're right, that's amazing, thank you for pointing that out. Even if you are dead wrong. And I find that really frustrating. So I find myself doing extra research sometimes to make sure that I know what I'm talking about. It gets great to have AI kick out those test cases or analyze our requirements or anything like that. But if I don't really know my business and I don't really know my product, I don't know when it's making stuff up. So I'm spending more time having those conversations going, okay, this is what I came up with, and this is what, you know, GPT kicked out when we did the analysis. What am I missing? This doesn't sound quite right, but I don't know enough about it. Tell me more. And so I find myself shifting more into like root cause analysis rather than the actual testing side of things now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's an interesting point of view. I think that's it's a good way to deal with that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've always been a big fan of kind of the big picture. I'm one of those people that if I don't understand how it impacts other systems or connects with my user, then I don't know what to look for. I have to see the whole picture. So I can make sure a program that's supposed to draw a circle draws a circle. That's great. But why does somebody need a circle? What if they're asking for a square? And so those are the things that I find myself more and more having more and more time to go find out with AI. But it also means I really need to know those answers now instead of just assume.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
true. We're going so fast. One assumption can snowball so quickly.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We have to reflect more and to review more what we have on the table now, because it sounds good, but it doesn't have to be good what comes out there. Yeah. Yeah. And it's what you also say, I think it's the very, very important thing is you said that you connect to the user. So I had yesterday, I had a talk with a QA guy from a startup, and they are very near to the end user because they need the feedback from the user really for their application, for their service. And I think when I look at my clients, sometimes big companies with huge software landscape, they are not even knowing for whom they are doing the stuff they are developing there, and what is the idea behind that. And I think this is so important to make a good job. So
yeah, I think we've seen the downfall of several companies that have kind of lost touch with their user base. Adobe, right? Photoshop was for years the tip top of the market. You didn't even think about anything else. It became a household name. And now people are like, yeah, it's okay. It does its job. The users weren't getting what they wanted.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's a normal way, because companies get growing and they are getting bigger, and so the gap is growing too. So maybe that's normal. But we as a tester, I think we are often the advocate for the user, and we can raise the flag and say, okay, I have to tell something. I don't think that this is really, really useful for the end user, what we are doing there.
Absolutely. It's one of the things that I tell people that cut their QA teams is that means your users are your first line of defense, because they will find the bugs. They find the bugs that we miss all the time, right? Do you want them to find all the issues? They're not going to be happy. And once you've broken that trust, oof, hard yeah. to get back.
That's a good argument. I would note it down for me for my next season. When a manager says, we have to get rid of the QA team.
Yes. Well, I use my mom as a perfect example because her biggest frustration in life is logging into her bank. It's a little small town bank and they have a beautiful website, and logging in is a nightmare process. Even if you, like, I know my password, it's saved in a password keeper. It's like, are you sure you're you? Do you really know your password? Maybe we should reset it every time. To the point where I've said, why don't you change banks?
Yeah. yeah. That's you
yeah. Your users are going to get frustrated.
Yeah, that's so true. Because last year I changed the bank because of the web e-banking, not because of the password, because the website, when you log in, they use elements and a style which I was known from the beginning of the 2000s, and they did a refresh 2 years ago, but it looks nearly the same, and it's the usability is from hell. And so I said, okay, that's not the way I want to work. I have to deal with my bank account every 2 days. And when it's not that useful for me, I have to change the bank and take another one, which has a better app and a better web page. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It makes your life easier. And if one person would have just said, let me pretend to be a user for a second and go through the process, they would have gone, what is happening here?
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. But for
one person just acting as that advocate.
Yeah, but being that advocate also needs the skill to have some courage to stand up and speak in the meeting and say, okay, this is not the right way. And I think this is not really mainstream nowadays to stand up and raise your voice and say it's not the way we should do it in a company. It's my view. Well, what is your experience with that?
Oh, no, I absolutely agree. I think one of the things that I keep hearing over and over in conversations is that we have these toxic positivity cultures of, you know, we celebrate every release and wow, it went so great and everything went so fast and smooth. And there's usually one QA over there going, except, but what about all those bugs I logged? And they just live on the backlog, and the backlog is hundreds of bugs long. But yay, we did a good job. And I hear it over and over and over again. And I think it takes a certain amount of bravery to be able to stand up. But I think it comes back to those communication skills of being able to say things. It's really hard to tell somebody that they're not doing a good job because that's a horrible thing to say, right? It's not that you're not doing a good job. It's that I found this thing that I think we can improve upon, and learning to reframe it so that it's not our users are going to have a horrible time. It's what can I do to help make this smoother? Did you notice this? What can I help with next time? Everything for me has become such an iterative process, particularly with as fast as we're moving with AI and DevOps and all of the things that make us go faster and faster and faster every day. It's okay. We have version one. It's great. I love that we got it out. What do we do to make it better? And that doesn't mean shoving new features in it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Sometimes it's let's go fix that typo real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what you say is totally true, that we have to learn how to the thing you also said in the beginning is that we have to talk to our audience in the company, that they can take that what we have to say. And if we have to reframe it, and we have to in the best way we reframe it that way that they think that this was their idea and not our idea to improve it, and then everyone is happy.
it is a little backleady, and they're we lose so much of our communication when we're not face-to-face and we don't have facial expressions and body gestures. So if you're sending somebody a message over Slack, you can sound like a really mean, terse, horrible person and be like, that's not what I meant at all. I know several people that use ChatGPT as a filter and say, tell me what this tone sounds like because I'm going to send it to my boss and I don't want to sound horrible. So that if you're one of those people that can't pick the right words and always comes across as, you know, slightly brash and rude, maybe that's a good option. Reaching out to a friend who's just really good at that stuff, saying, what does this sound okay if I just sent this to you? Am I really mean? Do I need more coffee? What's because that filtering is a skill to learn. I don't think any of us just, well, probably a few of us actually just magically have it, but very, very few and far between. It's a learned skill to figure out how to say something, particularly when you're straight text.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And it's a good idea to use AI for this to challenge your tone of voice. How does it fit to the audience? I think that's a very good usage of AI. If you stay a little bit authentic in it.
Yeah. I don't ever want to use AI to the point where I lose my voice. Right. I have certain intonations and certain phrases that I use all the time and pauses that I put in. And I never want to lose that. But that little gut check of tell me what the tone is. And if it comes back and says, well, this is kind of confrontational, you go, okay, I need to rewrite that. Like, I need to try again.
Yeah, like, yeah. That's true.
Yeah, I have such a hard time with that loss of interpersonal communications when I'm just over text. I've gotten told that I have a tone, so I tend to use a lot of emojis and double check myself in that way as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good inspiration. I think we can think about our communication skill there too. When we look at the next 5 years, do you think testing will change that much that is now predicted by all? We use AI and it will replace us and all this stuff. Do you think that really gonna happen, or will our role completely change, and in which direction?
So if I had to put money on it, I think it's going to be a shift a lot like what we saw with test automation, right? It was supposed to end manual testing and we were never going to have to do that horrible slog ever again. But then we found out that it was really necessary to get hands on your product and actually use it and do those exploratory moments, and automation freed up time for that. I put my money in that bucket. I think AI is going to help us speed up automation, identify things we need to run through manually, but those manual skills and taking the time to use it is going to be so important. As long as you've got people using your software and not just other software using your software, there's going to be human error in it, and you have to have human hands on it. So I think we'll just see another bucket and maybe a shift towards specialized AI testers and AI-driven testing, but I don't think we'll ever completely get rid of the manual tester and the estets and things like that until we've eliminated users that are human.
Yeah. Yeah, could be a good way. And how do you think when a tester today thinks about his or her career in the next years, and now here's this episode and wants to have a tip and what to learn or what to deal with in my experience and in my personality, what would you recommend there?
For me, it's been about following, this is going to sound so cliche, it's about following my passion. I wanted to be a dev. I accidentally became a QA. Turns out I'm really good at finding those weird cases of like, well, what happens if I do hit enter 50 times? Oops, I broke the database. But that means that because I like the dev work, I kind of have a specialty in API test automation. It's all back end. I'm strictly code. That's kind of my happy place. But as I explored more things, I also found out I have a really strong passion for UX and accessibility. So that meant I had to go learn that. And somewhere along the lines, I kind of became, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. And I love it that way because I get to play with new tools all the time and I get to explore new things and I get to have these conversations. I know people that have gotten into the field and gone, I want absolutely nothing to do with that. I'm very happy doing exploratory testing. Look at what I can do. Look at the people I've helped. That's their happy place. So I think if you find and explore around until you find something that you're like, this is what I love to do, there's a place for that. I think there's always going to be a place for somebody who's strictly manual testing or somebody who's like, I have done nothing all day but write AI prompts and look at all the work I've done. Love that. That's your happy place. And there's a spot for that. So I think talking to community members, saying, oh, show me the new tool that you're playing with. Maybe that's the thing that clicks for you and you're like, this is amazing and what I want to do every day. You never really know until you try, but I think there's a spot for everybody out there and there's a spot. I mean, quality is everybody's responsibility. So even salespeople that I know that are like, they get really excited when they're the ones that found the bug, right? I was showing off this to the client. Look what I found. Yeah. There's that moment for everybody where it's kind of neat and you kind of feel like you've like discovered gold and you can't wait to see what comes of it. So find that moment where you've got your hidden treasure.
And I think what you said is so true. You cannot find it by thinking about it. You have to try it out, because it's this passion is a feeling that you get when you have this moment.
Yeah. Yes. One of the things I love about teaching is watching my students find that when the light bulb goes off and they get really excited and you can see the endorphins just kind of take over and they're super happy and excited and look at what I did. I'm like, okay, they're hooked.
Yeah, they found
their moment.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Hopefully, a lot of people will get their moment there too, in, and find their passion also in the QA and testing area. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you're finding yourself going, oh my gosh, I don't want to go to work tomorrow because I can't do one more manual test. Try something new. See if your boss will let you automate that thing. You know, why not?
Yeah, I think we have there's one benefit of all this QA testing stuff. It's that there is a lot of things we can do in there. It's so different activities we can deal with all the testing and QA stuff, from automation, from test data generation, now with AI, now with all the different test levels and test types, non-functional things. So there is a lot of things we can choose from. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yes. And for all the people that are at the forefront of figuring out how to test agents and think on 12 different dimensions instead of yes or no, and it's a skill. And I love that you have it because I'm getting there.
Yeah.
So I think there's new stuff coming up every day. And you know, one of these days we'll have somebody that writes a whole new book that teaches us how to do something, and it might be you. Like, who knows?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Great, Tara. I see the time is already running, and I think we have to discuss later on in another episode too. I liked it really that we get now in touch and talked about these topics. Maybe near the Eurostar conference we see in person. Maybe we can do an episode there too. We will see.
Oh, that would be so much fun.
Yeah. It was a real pleasure talking to you after all that weeks of dealing with our meeting today. So thank you very much that you are now part of the show, and hope you enjoyed it too. And looking forward.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I feel like we could do this 100 times and not cover half of what we want to talk about, but I'm so glad I got to finally sit down and talk to you, and can't wait to do it again.
Yeah, thank you very much. Have a good time.
tuned.